That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Welcome to Staying Connected, a podcast where I talk to other people about their stories with VEDS or vascular Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. Hey everyone, and welcome back to Staying Connected. This is your host, Katie, and before we get into the show, I want to remind you that the views, information, and opinions in these podcasts are those of the individuals involved and do not represent the opinions of the Marfan Foundation. The Marfan Foundation is not responsible for and does not verify for accuracy any of the information contained in them, nor does the information constitute medical or other professional advice or services. This show is not produced by or affiliated with the Marfan Foundation or the VEDS movement. I am so excited to welcome you back to Staying Connected for the third season of this show. It's been a really incredible experience to talk to you about your stories with VEDS on this podcast for the last 4 years, and I'm really feeling the momentum of these growing connections in our community. This season, we're going to talk to five people about their stories with VEDS and one of the wonderful physician researchers in our community, Dr. Shane Morris. New episodes will be released every other Saturday until June 11th, when the final episode of the season will air. To kick off the season, we're going to talk to Heidi Green, who lives in New Jersey and whose 9-year-old daughter, Isabella, was diagnosed with VEDS. Huge thanks to Heidi for sharing her story on the podcast and raising awareness with us by sharing her daughter's experience and her own experience as a parent raising a child with this condition. Let's go to the interview. Hey, Heidi, I am so excited to have you join the podcast today and share your story. Thank you so much for joining.
Thank you for having me.
So you have a daughter, Isabella. How old is she?
She just turned 9 in October.
And when was she diagnosed with VEDS?
She was diagnosed April 12th of 2021, last year. So fairly recent.
Yeah, that is fairly recent. So how did that come about?
It was like a long process. So Isabel is a twin, and at 33 weeks, her water broke. So I didn't go into labor right away. I went into the hospital and was on hospital bed rest for that week. And they were hoping that just to give them a little bit of extra time in there. So then they delivered at 34 weeks. And initially, like, she came out and she looked around the room, and I even, like, watching the videos, like, the doctor's like, wow, look at her big eyes, and she's so alert. And so they were both in the NICU for about three weeks. And I just remember her eyes were so big, but my eyes were really big. Her skin was really thin, but she's a preemie too, so... I think at the time I really didn't think much about anything. And then we brought them home from the NICU. And I think shortly after bringing them home, they both had lots of GI issues where they would throw up all the time. They had a hard time like drinking their bottle, and I was pumping and bottle feeding them. And my husband and I would kind of like team up. He would take one child and I would take the other. And I just remember, like, as soon as they finished just like a little bit, the second we turned them, they would just come straight out. And the pediatrician said, you know, it's normal, you know, there's, don't worry about it. They're growing, they're hitting they're on the curve. So even though they're hitting like the minimum weight gain, they're still gaining. And there's no need to be concerned. And I think it was more that they thought that having twins was overwhelming. And I know like having twins is overwhelming. Taking care of two babies at the same time, it is overwhelming, but it was kind of harder than normal because to get them to gain that, you know, half a pound or the 1 pound, it was just so much work to get them there. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until, you know, I would say, you know, she cries a lot. She has a hard time like sleeping. They never really took to solids or purees. Like they're all those milestones that kind of would come naturally. She wouldn't. I remember her reflexes were so sharp. I would just try to come in with like the puree on the spoon and she would just like grab it and like, whack it or like turn around, cry and like vomit.
Oh no.
So there was a lot of that. And then it was a bigger practice. So I think we got to see a few of the doctors in the practice and we would explain and they're just like, "What? Whatever you're doing, just keep doing because they're gaining and all that kind of stuff." And then it wasn't until their 1 year checkup when we went and we got to see another doctor at that practice that she raised the red flag that no, they're not where they need to be. They're really low on the curve, borderline failure to thrive. They're going to be behind in speech and OT and they're going to need all this stuff. And so at that time, I think it was really frustrating because for the entire year I was going in and like pretty much in tears, like I didn't know what to do with them. We started at another pediatrician practice and he put us in touch with a gastroenterologist and feeding therapy. So we did that with both of them. But I always felt that there was something more with Isabella. Mm-hmm. So I think Jackson, yes, he struggled with eating. He would vomit. There was the constipation issue as well. But with Isabella, it was like two notches more. And there was the bruising, the translucent skin. It was like very visible. She developed an umbilical hernia and all these concerns when I would bring them up, they were like, by the time she turns 8, all this stuff is going to be like resolved. That hernia is going to be an innie because she was born so early that's probably why you see the skin. She didn't get to develop the fat that goes underneath. And then I should say that at the time of her birth, she was diagnosed also with intrauterine growth restriction. So they essentially think that she stopped growing in utero at 32 weeks, and then her water broke at 33 weeks, and then she was delivered at 34. So I think they tied a lot of her having a little bit more of issues to the fact that because of her being such a preemie.
Yeah, so it's easy for them to say, like, yeah, all of these things are happening, but she was a preemie and that just happens with preemies and not look into it.
Right, pretty much.
Now, the twins, they're not identical twins.
No, they're not. Okay. They're maternal.
Okay.
So then we did the feeding therapy and they said she likes probably GERD. She bled easily and bruised really easily. And I remember her maybe she was like 2 and she got like a little paper cut. And I tried to just kind of like, I put pressure on it and the napkin was so full of blood from just like a really tiny, such a tiny like cut. And I was like, well, that's really odd. Like, do I need to take her to the hospital because of this? Or I brought it up and like all the blood work would come back, like nothing really there. Fast forward, we finished feeding therapy. They started growing a little bit. Growing and like meeting their mile markers and everything like that. We make a trip out to California to go to Disney. And during that time, she just had a small sinus infection, but it went into streptococcal pneumonia, and she was hospitalized, and it was a real, like, she already had her near-death experience then.
How old was she?
She was five, turning six.
Wow.
She was vaccinated for she did have the pneumococcal vaccine. The infectious disease doctor came in, and they couldn't figure out what was going on, essentially. And when they found out that it was strep pneumonia, her labs were all off. I remember he told me, when you guys get back to Jersey, follow up with an immunologist and have her see a hematologist, because I think there's something off there. I can't pinpoint it, but he recommended that we follow up.
Mm-hmm.
So we did that, and they pulled titers, and they just, I don't know if it's VEDS related or not, but then when they pulled the titers, they saw that she, even though she was vaccinated, she never developed the antibodies to the vaccine.
And now, did they test her for von Willebrand's or anything, like, at the hematologist office?
Yes. So when we saw the hematologist, I brought up to him that she bleeds really easily. I'm noticing blood in her stool. It was like fresh blood. And he said, all right, well, we'll do a von Willebrand panel, and we'll test some other things and figure out, kind of take it from there and see what it is. So when all the blood work came back, it was within normal range, like nothing, there was no flag for von Willebrand. There was some other stuff on there, just kind of like her white blood cell count was high, but it was just probably everything coming off of having that infection. And he just said, you know, just be thankful you have a perfectly healthy daughter. There really isn't anything there. And so we kind of like let that rest and had her kind of recover from that episode that we had in California. And then after that, I just kept noticing like the blood in her stool, and she turned 8, and all these things that I was told were kind of resolved by then had not. And I just thought, like, maybe I'm crazy. Maybe there isn't anything there. And it's just, I'm trying to find something, but I just knew in my gut that there's just something just isn't right.
Like, did the problems with her brother resolve by this point for him?
Yeah, I think, yes, for him, it wasn't like he had stopped. He didn't like throw up with every meal after, like, that kind of like weaned off. He's a better eater, like all those like things that kind of you would expect he would age out of. It happened with him, but it didn't necessarily happen with her. And there was always that extra factor of, I think, the translucent skin, which I don't know how much, like, what does that even mean? I don't even know what that's how she was born, maybe. But I did notice that even if put the seatbelt on, the seatbelt would leave like little petechiae, like little red tiny bruises on her neck. A Band-Aid, if the second I take the Band-Aid off, they'd be bruising from the Band-Aid. And even like now that I think about it, I remember just the NG tube that she had in the hospital left her with a big bruise mark on her cheek.
Mm.
Just like very fragile. And I like now everything makes sense, but at the time it was just kind of like, so I think it was like last year that around maybe this time last year, I thought to myself, I'm like, I need more answers in a way. I feel like there's more to it. So I went to the pediatrician and I said, listen, maybe I am crazy. Maybe it's just a series of coincidences. Or maybe there's something more, but I really think we should like do some genetic testing and find out if there's something other than that. I honestly was starting to think maybe it's Marfan, but she doesn't have the other characteristics of Marfan.
Yeah. What made you think of Marfan? Like, had you heard of Marfan somewhere else? Or
I had started nursing school, so I had looked into Marfan, and she's very tall too. So I was like, oh, maybe, and I saw that it was like a connective tissue disease. So I thought maybe that might be it. just trying to figure out. I had not heard of VEDS or all these years. It wasn't ever on the radar. It just wasn't there. I would have never thought. I wouldn't have even known to ask the doctor, could it be VEDS, because I just had never heard of it or met anybody who had it.
Yeah. So what did the pediatrician say, like, when you came to them and said, okay, can we do genetic testing? Like, I really think, I don't know if I'm crazy or if there's something else here, but yeah, can we do this? How did they respond to that?
I think at that point I had exhausted her. I think she was just tired. It was just like, okay, fine. We'll just do it. Even though, like, in all my years of practice, I really don't think that there's anything more than this is just who she is. So she referred me to the geneticist and they did testing. And in that time, I didn't want to do a Google search for symptoms, because, you know, you Google search symptoms and it's going to be like, you have cancer. So I didn't want to, I wanted to avoid doing the Google search. But I just plugged in her symptoms. Like, she sleeps with her eyes open. I sleep with my eyes open and I don't have VEDS, but I just put in, like, she sleeps with her eyes open, translucent skin, easy bruising. And the first thing that came up was vascular Ehlers-Danlos.
Wow.
And then I found the link to Annabelle's challenge and I clicked on that, and there was pictures of people who have VEDS, and it was like, oh, this is exactly, they look more like Isabella than Isabella looks like her twin brother, or especially the pictures of how it looks like with the skin and the eyes and all that stuff. And when you read, it was just, I saw like the checklist, kind of the minor features and then the major ones. And literally it was like, check, 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 you know, motion sickness, sleeping with your eyes open, easy bruising, translucent skin.
It was all there.
It was all there.
Now, is that after you had gotten you were waiting on the results from the genetic test?
Yes.
So how did that feel? Like, what went through your mind at that point?
I kind of felt like this is it, but also in denial at the same time. No. Maybe I'm just kind of like overreacting. Maybe I'm overthinking it in a way. And I just kind of like put it off, tried to kind of like shove it in like the backside of my head and kind of, well, let's wait and see. Maybe let's wait and see for what the genetic testing comes back. And initially, like, I was crying and sobbing, and my husband was just like, just wait until we have confirmation. It may not be it. And, you know, you can't type in symptoms into Google and this is what you're going to get, you know, you're going to get the worst scenario. I told you not to do that. So, but yeah, when I called the geneticist, you know, at that time when we were expecting the results, and they had to did a microarray, and she was like, yeah, that's there's nothing there. And on this test, everything looks good. And I was like, yes, the connective tissue panel, though. What does the connective tissue panel say? And she was like, oh, okay, I'm going to put you on hold. I'm going to get the genetic counselor on the phone. And I don't even know what happened there when she put me on hold. I think I collapsed. And Kevin walked in and he took the phone to try to speak with the person. That was the genetic counselor. And she said, yeah, so it did come back positive for the COL3A1 gene. And it's a confirmation that she does have vascular EDS. So they scheduled an appointment for us to meet with them the following day to get the, I wanted to get the paperwork. And, you know, at that time I reached out to Annabelle's Challenge, Jared, and he called us right away, which is great. He was so supportive, and he put me in touch with Frances in Texas, and she was just so much support there. Kind of was just like, well, you know, it's okay. You know, it doesn't, there are variations of VEDS, and you just got to know kind of what the outcome really varies on what kind of mutation she has. So what else did the geneticist tell you? And I was like, I don't know. Like there's, I have no idea. So she was like, when you go in, ask for the paper, you know, she told me exactly what I needed to do and look and find out if it's splice, because that kind of, you know, is the more severe one. So we walked into the office and I'm like, give me the paperwork. I looked at the paperwork and I'm like scanning it for like the type of mutation, and it's like splice. And that was another punch to the gut too. And when I asked, like, what does this mean? Like, I asked the geneticist, can you put us in touch? Are there any other families that have this mutation in New Jersey that I can reach out to? And he was just like, no, I don't have any other families that have this mutation type. And it wasn't, it was maybe like the first time that were the first family. So there wasn't really, we didn't really have that many resources. It was like the guidance wasn't, I didn't know where to go from there. Thankfully that Frances, you know, connected me with the VEDS movement, mm-hmm. and the Facebook group and other families from across the United States that have it, and our parents that have it. And I just remember when we met with the geneticist and I said, what about us? Is it possible that I have it? And I just didn't know that I have it. And he said, no, because at your age, you would have probably experienced something by now.
Did they do genetic testing on you?
Yes, they, okay. So they tested myself, my husband, and Isabella's twin brother. And it was a de novo mutation. Okay. So it's a new one that just happened.
How did that feel connecting with other families?
I would say it's one of the main reasons that helped us push through, especially in the first few months until now. I still reach out for support from other parents, in particular Rachel in Texas and Abby. They've been really amazing as far as kind of helping me. And or I'll say, hey, you know, I'm not sure, we're going on this trip and I'm not really sure kind of like what we can do. Like, what do you do with your kids? And they'll help us through. And I think just seeing, like, I think that maybe she's the only one in New Jersey that has the type of mutation that we have that we know of.
Right.
I feel that we, just because we went through the genetic route and we just tried to find out what it was, and that's how we happened to find out. And maybe there are other people that have it and they just don't know that they have it yet.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I mean, I think there are still a lot of people who don't know they have this.
Right.
And, you know, I think it kind of feels like, I don't know, it feels like we're in kind of like this diagnosis wave. Like more and more people are joining the group every day, and it just feels like it's being recognized more, or it's like a coincidental finding more often in the genetic testing, you know. And I think, to your point, there might be plenty of other people in New Jersey that have this and just don't know yet, and maybe we'll meet them.
Yeah, exactly. And I think just kind of how far genetics has come in the last 5 years, just even, you know, before that, it was hard to get approvals to get some genetic testing. And now you can, there are companies that can, you can do it on your own where you don't need to go through that, you know, go through the insurance route if, per se.
So does Isabella know that she has vets?
Well, she she knows she is fragile because I had to, you know, we did all the testing, and after that, I had to set up her scans at Hopkins, and we were traveling as a family, and she's 8 turning 9. So I think she has to know something, right? So I have to explain something. I can't just take her into an MRI machine and just be like, hey. So she does know, she knows she's fragile, and she has to kind of be careful with going, like, we're not doing rides anymore, you know, soccer, some contact sports that maybe she was into, to pull away from that because she might, like, you know, bruise or get hurt, things like that. And I think she's very self-aware too of the fact that she does bruise easily and she does get hurt. So I think a lot of her, I think she has an innate way of kind of self-protecting that has always been there. So I think it was maybe last week that she said, she goes, Mom, what is my disability called? And I was like, it's called VEDS, vascular EDS. And she was like, hey, Siri. And I was just like, no, do not. Yeah, exactly. So I wanted to avoid that happening. So I just said, you don't want to Google or ask an electronic device to give you answers because it has all the information and you, it's hard to like sift through. So we did start therapy, mm-hmm. kind of like help navigate. I started first because I think in the beginning stages, once we got the diagnosis, I got really busy with creating her care team. Like I went to work and my days were really busy trying to make sure that we have a team at the local hospital, and there's a plan, and reaching out to our vet specialists and kind of letting them know that we're on the radar and what to do and just get all that set up. And then once all that was done, I think it hit home that this is kind of real and it's our reality. And I had a hard time mentally dealing with it. And you think that, oh, maybe I've gone through so much in my life that I'm conditioned and I can overcome this on my own. And it's part of the process of grieving and all that. But I realized that I can't do it on my own. I need more support and sought some therapy. And it's been really great because, I mean, there's the silver lining of COVID has we've been able to do telehealth therapy, and our therapist has VEDS.
Wow.
So who better to understand kind of what I'm going through and help give me guidance and like then and knows really what it is than that person.
Yeah, you don't have a therapist kind of like telling you like you're being too anxious or that you're catastrophizing or something when exactly. The realities of VEDS are so severe.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And she's been incredibly helpful. And Isabella also has her session with her every week. And even though it's not bed centered, I wanted to give her that outlet, want her to have that outlet of being able to vocalize and talk about how it affects her in that's not me.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I just want, because sometimes there's, you know, the parent and some maybe you don't want to talk or say everything to your parent, and that's okay. that she has that comfort with somebody else that's gonna understand, because she does say, because we had to pull her out of, she was in baseball, so we pulled her out of baseball at the time. She wants to go on like the highest roller coaster. We're like, maybe not. working with her school also, and making sure, like, you know, she's not involved in the contact sports. So she's just like, you know, I really wish I didn't have this disability, because, you know, I can't hide it. Like, I want to do stuff, and I don't want to have, like, you know, she feels like it's holding her back from just experiencing being a kid and stuff. So it's good that she has Mariah to kind of talk to and help her through that. And it's funny, she really loves Bethany Hamilton, and she's like watched her movies, and she was like, wow, you know, I can't believe like she went back in the water. I'd be so afraid. And I was like, yeah, well, you know, she didn't let her disability take over. And I'm sure it's hard, and it's hard every day to not have that be the center. And I have to work on it myself too, to not see it as it's everything, it's part. And we did like, oh, she was eating French fries at the time and like the ketchup. So I just squirted some ketchup on. I was like, this is your disability. And this is the rest of the plate. it will always be there, but you know, some days it might be really big and other days it won't be. It's not all of you, it's part of you. And that is something that I have to kind of work on every day as well as a parent, that it's part of our reality, but it's not everything. And we can still, you know, carry on and enjoy and be present in the moment.
Yeah, that's wonderful. What are some of the things that you've really had to overcome as a parent of a child with this condition, or some things that you're still working on overcoming?
I think it's just the anticipatory grief, I would say, and being present in the moment. It's hard because when we have such great moments and your daughter is your best friend, I want it forever. And it's hard because it's like vets is always like the elephant in the room. And I don't want it to rob me from it. It's a mental challenge to not have vets rob you from being present. Today, she's healthy, she's happy, and we're doing great. And it's just being present in that moment. And they say like, oh, well, nobody's guaranteed anything. And, you know, you never know what's going to happen. You know, I may go out and I may never come back. And that's true, right? Nobody's really guaranteed anything. But when you have such a heavy diagnosis, it's hard to not have that be the forefront. Like, well, yes, but the chances are, and statistically, that something might happen, and there's a greater chance because of this condition. And then bringing it back to center and thinking about, well, there is no greater time. It sucks to have beds, as one of the other moms says, that she has her son, Abby. She goes, yeah, it sucks to have beds. It does. It sucks to have beds, but there is really no greater time, I feel, to be introduced to vets than now, because of the vets movement, because of genetic testing being so readily available, the trials that are starting. You have to hold on hope that in the next 5 to 10 years that there's going to be something promising for everybody that has this condition.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a beautiful way to look at it. I mean, I think it's true too. You know, there's so much going on right now for beds that wasn't going on a few years ago even. And it does make it a hopeful time, yeah, for the community. I think you're probably right. There hasn't been a better time to get diagnosed with this, even though it sucks. it's a hard diagnosis, but knowing that there are things coming up, I think makes it just a little bit easier. And I think the community is more connected than it ever has been before.
I can talk till tomorrow about how amazing the community has been. And it's kind of like, it's an immediate connection that you have. And it's an instant love that you share with somebody when you know they're walking in your shoes and they understand. And they've probably gone to several doctors themselves and thought to that it's just in their head, or they're crazy, or they're overreacting. So you share similar stories and you share similar fears. And I think everybody, from the individuals who are personally affected with BEDS, to parents who are raising kids with BEDS, to the doctors that specialize in BEDS, I mean, they're really just at literally a handful in the whole country, but you feel so connected that even though we're in New Jersey, I know that if I ever reached out to Rachel or Abby or you or anybody, you guys would immediately be there. And that is so comforting. And I am so happy that once Isabella knows more about what she has, that she has that community and the family really there and to support her through.
That's so wonderful.
Yeah.
If there's something that you would, as a parting thought, want a medical professional listening to this or another community member who is just going through this diagnosis to know, like, is there anything?
I think for medical professionals, I would say it's hard to think of something so rare, because maybe they're so used to seeing stuff that is more typical. And it's really hard to identify the atypical. And that is not to, like, I don't blame medical professionals at all, because I feel that everybody's really genuinely, truly trying to find the best care for the patient with what they know, but maybe dig a little bit deeper, especially because with how genetic testing has become available. You know, maybe if the Van Wilderpan panel comes back all fine, that maybe it's not just that child. Maybe just, all right, let's look a little bit further and further explore what it is, because it really changes the outcome. Going to the hospital now, knowing that my child has BEDS, she has a better chance because I already know what she needs and also spreading awareness to emergency rooms, because that is her first source of care is going to be through an emergency room. Mm-hmm. So it's, you don't suspect somebody who's a teenager to go in doubled over that it's not like gastritis or just a stomach ache, or maybe they had too much to drink or something, but really like spot them. And especially if they have their BEDS card, to get them to the CAT scan, because you want to get ahead of it, then try to catch up. And I guess for parents, I would say, and I say this to myself, I wake up consciously every day and try to say this, is try to be present in today, and hopefully tomorrow will be better, because it's easy to not to think about all the worst things that can happen and have it take away from your moment and steal you from your joy that you have with your children.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for sharing that. And thank you for sharing your story and Isabella's story on the podcast.
Thank you. And thank you for being so supportive to me and my family. I really appreciate you so much, Katie. And I appreciate you spreading the word.
Thank you, Heidi. This is sweet. No, thank you so much. It means a lot to me to be able to do this. And it means a lot to know you and know everybody in the community. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you everyone for listening in today, and a huge thanks again to Heidi for sharing her story on the podcast. If you find this show helpful or informative, I hope you will consider sharing it with your friends on social media to help us raise awareness of vets together. You can also support this show by joining my Patreon at patreon.com/translucent1. Don't forget to subscribe to the show on your podcast player and stay tuned for the next episode on April 16th. We'll be talking to Otto Nitschmann in Austin, Texas. Thank you so much, and I will see you soon.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18+.